Hey folks, my name is Jason Spies and I travel across these great states talking to small business owners, CEOs, policymakers, musicians, and mentors about making money, giving back, and balancing life. I find out how they prioritize professional and personal time while still making money. Yes, indeed, our guests are real heavyweights in understanding business and life. So get ready to relax, learn a little bit, and get a cup of coffee ready because my name is Jason Spies and this is Coffee and Capitalism Radio.
Sitting on a million, sitting on it every day. Can't make no money giving your stuff away. Why don't you do now? Like the millionaires do. Put your stuff on the market. You can make a million too.
Welcome to Coffee and Capitalism Radio, heard in the Crude Life Media Network. My name is Jason Spies, and I'm your host today. Thank you, folks, for pulling up a stool and joining the conversation. Coffee and Capitalism brings you exclusive interviews and distinct content from leaders who drive our economy. From CEOs to small business owners to mentors, Coffee and Capitalism is a leader in innovation, ideas, and inspiration. Here at Coffee and Capitalism, we are all about making money and giving back, learning the fine art of balancing work and family life, and prioritizing your time. Also, taking that necessary step of action. Not just talking about it, not just posting about it, actually taking action. On today's episode of Coffee and Capitalism Radio, we got a fantastic lineup in store for you. Workplace wellness. We talk with Thomas Brewer from the TB Group. He travels around and kind of acts as a crisis consultant for workplace injuries, employee deaths, other difficult paths for companies. Thomas Brewer has found a little niche in the marketplace as a crisis consultant, if you will. Then we check in with the state of North Dakota. They are a lot of firsts in a lot of different areas. UAS, of course, is a big one up there. Oil and gas, they're figuring out some new technology up there, and that's where this story comes in. Kevin Connors, Oil and Gas Division of North Dakota Industrial Commission, he talks about the new market that's created up there, the carbon capture market in North Dakota, and it comes through energy. And then in our social media segment, Robert Smith with NOV Wellstream Processing talks about the unsung hero in the fracking world known as the sand trap. All that sand that needs to be fracked, well, something needs to trap it. Robert Smith, NOV Wellstream Processing, talks about that unsung hero. And then Kids in Capitalism, multimedia kidtrepreneur Otis sits down with Blue Weber from ArtNest. All that plus much more on today's episode of Coffee and Capitalism Radio. My name is Jason Spies, and this is Coffee and Capitalism Radio, heard on the Crude Life Media Network. Over the past few months, I've told you about how unbelievable Hatch coaching is. Well, don't just take my word for it. Listen to what Greg Tavine of Emerging Prairies has to say about Hatch coaching.
I got to watch him give a talk at TEDx Brookings, and I saw him come into his own where he shared uncomfortable things from his past in a way that created a teaching environment. And Eric's somebody that could easily lead with all he's accomplished, and it's a long list.
To find out more information about Hatch coaching or to have Eric Hatch come to your company or event, visit coachingwithhatch.com. That's coachingwithhatch.com. Welcome back to Coffee and Capitalism Radio, heard on the Crude Life Media Network. My name is Jason Spies, and I'm your host today. Up next, Thomas Brewer with the TB Group. What kind of niche industry, I guess, would you guys technically be, you know, if I'm looking in a phone book in 1980, apparently, if I'm going online and doing a Google search, I guess, what do you guys classify it under?
It probably would be. It could be emergency services in some sense of the wording, or it could just be a crisis consultant. But it's when we go on site and we deal with a situation that can range from a workplace injury to a death of an employee, whether it's on-site or even off-site after hours, or, you know, any critical incident in which an employee or a company is having to deal with and walking that difficult road ahead.
Okay, well, normally the way I usually like to do interviews is I like to give people a little bit of an elevator pitch, if you will. Not War and Peace, but also a little bit longer than an elevator pitch as a thank you for coming on the program. Of course, here on this program, we like to get to the facts. We like to make sure we give out good information. And so we bring on experts that can speak on what they know to speak on. We don't like to get into speculative different areas. That's not good for the oil and gas industry because it is a very, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? You need to have a good team in oil and gas in order to keep things moving very systematically and very smoothly, much like, you know, manufacturing and a lot of different things. You know, you really have to be safe and you really have to have concentration. Let me just ask you, what is the best way to broach a subject like this, which, you know, I'm having a hard time as an interviewer to say, you know, this is kind of a rough industry, guys.
Absolutely. You know, my background is since 2003, I have served the first responder community as a law enforcement chaplain. And, you know, we have had death, line of duty deaths. We've had injuries. And we have found over the years that if the officers and then on the corporate level and then on the oil and gas level, if they don't deal with the critical incident that they went through, that their head's not in the ball game. That their focus is somewhere else. They're dealing with the grief or the traumatic situation that they went through. They're dealing with the loss. And because of that, they're not giving a 100% focus to the task at hand. And when you do that, when you're not focused at the task before you, you can get hurt. Or you can cause somebody else to get hurt. Or, unfortunately, there could be a death because of the severity of the environment that you're working in. And if you don't allow these employees and these companies and these teams the opportunity to process it and have the time to visit with somebody about what they've experienced, that they might not have their head in the game the way they should. So we're trying to be proactive in getting the word out about, hey, care for your employees, care for your company, and set the standards so high that you're taking care of them as a person instead of just as an employee and maybe an employment number. So provide for the whole approach of them, their mind, their spirit, and their body.
You've been using the word proactive repeatedly, and of course, emergencies, the problem is it's an emergency because it happens out of the blue, but there is a way to be somewhat proactive, not 100%, but you have this strive, much like the airline industry has a strive for zero accidents, and the Bakken now with the governor comes out and he wants a zero spill. They'll be the first ones to admit that, you know, they're probably not going to hit 100%, but we're going to keep trying for it. So when you talk about being proactive, and then we can process kind of what happened down in Oklahoma and up in Castleton with these emergencies, how would you then advise people kind of the next step with their organization from today going forward, what we've learned and what we need to do going forward?
Oh, absolutely. That's a great question. One of the things that I suggest is having a resource in mind. You know, it's not if an injury will ever occur within the oil and gas industry. And also, unfortunately, it's not if there will be another death, it's when. And that's, you know, the unfortunate aspect of working in the field, that there are injuries, there are deaths. We never want to see those happen. We strive for the standards where they won't. But when they do happen, who do you call? Who is available? Because when you're in that 911 crisis mode of trying to pull all the resources in to respond to a critical incident, whether it's a death or an injury, that's not the time to start searching for a crisis consultant.
To listen to the full-length interview with Thomas Brewer from the TB Group or to check out other Coffee and Capitalism features, visit thecrudelife.com. That's thecrudelife.com. Coffee and Capitalism Radio is part of the Crude Life Media Network. Check us out on Facebook and Twitter. All those social media links can be found at thecrudelife.com. My name is Jason Spies, and this is Coffee and Capitalism Radio, heard on the Crude Life Media Network. Welcome back to Coffee and Capitalism Radio, heard on the Crude Life Media Network. My name is Jason Spies, and I'm your host today. Up next, Kevin Connors with the Oil and Gas Division and North Dakota Industrial Commission.
My name is Kevin Connors. I'm with the North Dakota Industrial Commission's Oil and Gas Division.
Thanks for joining us today, and we're going to talk a little bit about some carbon capturing. Now, the first thing that came to my mind was coal, so I thought I'd give Mr. Connors a call here to find out exactly if it's coal, oil, gas, etc. I kind of skimmed the press release, I'll be honest with you, so maybe if we could just have a little bit of a set the table a little bit on what you've been working on and kind of the history behind where we got today. How's that sound for you?
Yeah, that sounds great. I appreciate the opportunity. So what I've been working on is working with the Federal Environmental Protection Agency to get North Dakota the regulatory authority to regulate carbon dioxide storage in the deep subsurface in the earth.
Explain that a little further. I mean, you're talking about storage down in the earth. I mean, I'm thinking of like aquifers, but, you know, carbon furs, if you will. How exactly are we storing that carbon down in the earth?
Yeah, so, you know, the program, the regulatory program that we've developed is premised on protecting our underground sources of drinking water. And so there's all sorts of safeguards in place to make sure that carbon dioxide is injected in a manner that does not contaminate any freshwater resources and actually protects them. And we're typically looking for an ideal sandstone formation with rock above and below that will confine the carbon dioxide that's injected into the sandstone for the long term and make sure that it stays down there safely stored.
Now, in the press release, I saw something called Class 6 Well Activities. Can you explain that a little bit further? What would be a Class 6 well activity for geological storage of carbon dioxide?
Yeah, so, the Safe Drinking Water Act has a program called the Underground Injection Control Program, and that program consists of 6 well classes for the purposes of injecting different fluids into the earth in order to get rid of those fluids or to, in some cases, to enhance oil recovery in oil and gas fields. And in this case, Class 6 is for the injection of carbon dioxide for the purposes of long-term storage.
So off the top of my head, you know, like I said, the first thing I thought of was coal right away. I know that you guys have been working, or the state has been working on ERC, especially coal technologies that involve carbon. Of course, oil and gas has as well. Is this basically creating a carbon market, a carbon industry, if you will, in the state of North Dakota? Talk to me a little bit about what this is going to ripple into.
That's a good question. You know, what happened yesterday with Mr. Pruitt's signature really gave North Dakota a key piece to a bigger picture or a bigger puzzle. Now we have the regulatory authority. We give industry, the coal, the lignite coal industry, the oil and gas industry, and even the ethanol production industry, the regulatory certainty it needs to develop carbon capture and storage projects. And so really that's what we're looking at in terms of North Dakota is really positioned to be a leader in carbon capture and storage, not just with the regulations that are in place, but also with what we have in terms of our geology, our lignite coal supply, that proximity to oil and gas fields, and also our ethanol production, which, you know, in addition to coal, you know, the ethanol companies are also looking at carbon capture and storage as well.
Well, and that's where I was going with this, is that in the oil and gas world, you go to a different shale play and you have to use different technology. And it's kind of like the same technology, but it's different, you know, and a lot like coal. There's a lot of baseline technology that's the same, but you start getting other regions, especially in North Dakota, it's a different, you know, end game. It's a different, you know, after you get past the 50, it's a whole different game. And is that what I'm kind of hearing here? Because, I mean, at the end of the day, carbon is carbon, but the way to get carbon from ethanol, I would imagine, would be different than the way you get carbon from, say, the oil and gas wells and, say, the carbon. So is there a universal technology that's going to fix this, or, I mean, that's going to use this? Or does each industry going to kind of represent its own little tweaking of technology and its own little chemistry set? I'm not sure if I made any sense with that question, but are you following me at all with that?
Yeah, you know, I'm not an expert on the capture side of things. I'm more fall under where we're gonna put that carbon dioxide in terms of underground injection. But certainly, I know the ethanol production. You know, there's a pure stream of CO2 that comes off of that, and it's fairly it's less complex, I believe, to capture that CO2 than it would be for more like a coal-fired facility to capture that CO2. And there's a little more complexity there that comes along with that. But, you know, with this regulatory program in place, the reason I keep bringing up regulatory certainty is you know, that's a key component to continuing to develop and advance these new technologies to hopefully get to a point where we're looking at commercial scale, large scale projects.
Yeah, and I might be getting my head of myself a little bit here, because that was one of the big issues, as you know, for a long time, was that certainty that, let's be honest, there was a lot of science projects happening in North Dakota, and they were funded without certainty. Now, they were funded with uncertainty. So now with a level of certainty, you know, common sense would say that there's going to probably be more science projects or more definitive science that's going to kind of come out of the next, say, 5 years. That's kind of what I'm picturing in my head anyway.
Well, you know, the timing's great. And although we waited, you know, almost 5 years to receive this approval from the EPA, the timing couldn't be much better in terms of where the carbon capture and storage projects and industry are moving towards is really going from that demonstration type projects and more looking at really developing commercial size, large scale injection and storage projects. And so, you know, we really are positioned and, you know, the regulatory program that we have developed in conjunction with meeting the EPA requirements is the first in the nation, the first of its kind. And it's really exciting for all North Dakota, really, to put us in a position to be a leader in this type of industry.
So what put us over the top? You know, as you got in the final stages, you know, was there any certain regulatory paragraph that put us over the top, or any sort of company that stepped up and said, we're going to invest to the technology? Anything at all that they mentioned that we really... or that North Dakota really made sure their I's and T's were crossed?
You know, it was really our congressional delegation. So Senator Hovind and Senator Heitkamp and Congressman Kramer really worked hard from their end in Washington, D.C. to get this approval pushed forward. And that's ultimately what it came down to. I mean, we worked through the application process with EPA back in 2011, submitted the application in 2013, and made some traction in 2014, but then it really just got delayed. And the former EPA administration just didn't approve the application. So it became a somewhat of a political push to make sure that we got this primacy.
What's next for the state? What's next for the industry now? You know, we've got this federal... a grant, this approval. And so from the state's perspective, you know, over the next, say, 3 months, you know, what's your guys' expectation? And then transition that into industry. If somebody wants to know more, get involved in this carbon storage, is there opportunities now?
Well, I would say so. You know, Red Trail Energy is an ethanol production facility in Richardton. They've been looking at doing CO2 storage, and they're really at the forefront of coming along, and we anticipate them submitting a permit application to us in the near future.
To listen to the full-length interview with Kevin Connors with the Oil and Gas Division of North Dakota's Industrial Commission, or to listen to other Coffee and Capitalism features, visit thecrudelife.com. That's thecrudelife.com. My name is Jason Spies, and this is Coffee and Capitalism Radio, heard on the Crude Life Media Network. With the people that I know, I'm thinking I'm drinking, I'm spinning, I'm grinning. Oh, my car stops when I go. The music on today's program is written and performed by the Moody River Band. The Moody River Band has a new album hitting the downloadable streets on April 1st. For more information on the Moody River Band, their links, and their music, visit thecrudelife.com. That's thecrudelife.com, and click on the Musicians tab. This is the Moody River Band. I'm walking, I'm talking, I'm smoking, I'm joking. Over the past few months, I've told you about how unbelievable Hatch coaching is. Don't just take my word for it. Listen to what Christy Huber, president of the United Way of Cass Clay, says about Hatch coaching.
I think it's a really exciting time for our young leaders today because leaders like Eric Hatch are changing the face of what it means to lead an organization or what it means to lead a brand. He's changing that. For many years, I think that the gold standard of leadership has been somebody who is very polished and has it all together or seemingly has it all together. And throughout the years, I think that we've now, especially with technology and social media, we are drawn to what's real.
To find out more about Hatch Coaching or to have Eric Hatch speak at your event or company, visit hatchcoaching.com. That's hatchcoaching.com. Or call 701-212-1572. That's 701-212-1572.
Meridian Energy Group of Belfield, North Dakota is building the most technologically advanced oil refinery on the planet, the Davis Refinery, a project designed to achieve emission control levels the industry has never seen before. The Davis Refinery, working for North Dakota. MeridianEnergyGroupInc.com.
Welcome back to Coffee and Capitalism Radio, heard on the Crude Life Media Network. My name is Jason Spies, and I'm your host today. Up next, Robert Smith with NOV Wellstream Processing.
It's Robert Smith, and I'm with NOV Completion and Production with Wellstream Processing.
Well, explain that a little bit. I didn't even get a chance to write the whole thing down, and go ahead, man.
NOV has three different segments that have many different divisions under those. NOV basically provides just about any product for the oil and gas industry and a lot outside of the oil and gas industry, in fact. But luckily, they only give us a few items to deal with, so makes it a lot easier for us. What we do in the wellstream processing, we mainly handle my small group. We mainly handle saltwater disposal equipment, and we handle sand traps. It's the main thing we handle, which saltwater and sand are really big issues in the Permian and all of the other basins, in fact, right now. So it's a good business to be in, a good place to be in.
You know, I just got off the phone with a CEO of a company, and that was one of the things he mentioned, was that the frac sand crews and even the frac sand were starting to turn some heads in terms of trying, you know, supply and demand. We'll just call it that. You know, there seems to be not a hiccup or not a disruptor or anything, but there's a lot more attention being paid to that. Is that a fair way to state it?
Absolutely. It's definitely a possible bottleneck. The availability of sand and the ability to dispose of your water. And one thing we really dig into in my division, NOV, is we handle saltwater disposal facilities. And we can do anything from provide a single component for that saltwater disposal facility up to a turnkey facility. And that's really big right now. There's some really aggressive drilling plans in the Permian. I mean, we see rigs right now. There's, almost 500 rigs in the Permian. But it's hard to believe what some of these companies are telling me right now where they want to be in a few years, how many more rigs they want, how many more wells they want to be drilling. It's a great place to be and a great time to be here.
You use the term aggressive. That obviously means a very rapid acceleration in the terms of business. What do you see as a way to satisfy that term aggressive, you know, business-wise?
The oil companies really having to get aggressive to get their equipment they need. Like I said, there's a shortage of sand. There's shortages of places to dispose of water. A lot of the water now is being recycled and reused because all this water that they're pumping down hole for the fracks, it's going to come back. So they've got to do something with that water. And what they really like to do is be able to reuse it all. It's just really hard to do because it takes so much storage. That's mainly where we're focusing our energies on saltwater disposal. And when that water comes back, you're also going to get a lot of sand coming back with that. If you just let that sand go to your production equipment, which is there for the lifetime of the well, it's going to cause a lot of destruction on that equipment. We have a lot of sand handling capabilities that a lot of customers are really interested in right now. And we're really seeing a lot of things, you know, since this started, a lot of things are really coming to the top of the water, and they're really seeing what's going on.
How does that work when that comes back? I mean, you know, you don't have to get into the exact science of it, but you're right. You've got that salt water and sand that comes back together. What's the next steps on that?
Well, like I say, you've got to keep that sand from going into your production equipment. So what they do there is they'll use a sand trap. And we have a 48-inch ID, 5,000-pound sand trap that's been really popular with a lot of the producers here and a lot of the flowback companies. It allows you to hold a lot of sand and keep that sand from going into your production equipment. And the water, like I say, it's just got to be reused or put down a disposal well. And a lot of disposal wells are going to have to be drilled. There's with this aggressive drilling schedule for these companies, they're going to have a lot of disposal wells. Right now, we've got a lot of commercial saltwater disposal companies coming in. These guys are really laying a lot of pipelines, doing a lot of infrastructure for saltwater as well.
Robert Smith, NOV Completions and Production. I wrote down the sand trap because I could see where that's probably, you know, that's the unsung hero in this whole thing. You're right. I mean, I did so many stories on the different size of frack sand and the different shape and all these different things to where I could see where that sand trap's got to be a pretty high quality thing in order to keep the rest moving, huh?
It really is, and they're going to a smaller and smaller mesh on the sand, so it's they really got to look at some new ways of handling smaller sand. That the way they were doing it 2 or 3 years ago is not working. That sand's just going right on through. So, yeah, there's got to look at new ways of doing things.
Well, and that's what I was thinking, going, you know, the world of frack sand became so innovative. I could see where that has a direct impact to what you do because your sand, you know, something as simple as the sand trap has to be innovative as well. So talk to me a little bit about the innovation within your entire, you know, your entire sector within the oil and gas from the sand traps. Are you seeing other things that have become more innovative?
Yeah, a little. You know, most of this stuff is, same as it was when I started in this business in 1991. Very few changes. A lot of it's actually I saw some really high technology in a lot of the older equipment I used to work on, and it seems like there was a time in between then and now where a lot of the vessels kind of got away from all the technology. Now I think we're seeing a turn to go back to some of that technology. They're seeing how important it was, and it's really solving some of the problems they've got today. And what we're also seeing is a lot of the producers, like I say there, they've got really aggressive drilling plans, and they need somebody to build production equipment, and actually a lot of them have called on us to produce that equipment. And we bought a new shop in the Oklahoma City area.
What are you seeing overall, just the overall activity outside of your business? You guys deal with a lot of people throughout the day, obviously. You know, the oil and gas industry, I like to say, is everybody from the CEOs to the truck drivers to the cafe owners and everybody in between. What kind of things are you hearing out there?
You know, everybody's busy. Everybody's looking for help. It's really hard to find good help here. You go around town, every restaurant or store you go into has got help wanted signs. A lot of jobs out here, and this, I think I'm hearing a lot from the frack companies, rig companies, such as that. They just need more and more people. More and more people is going to be more and more equipment as well. So I think we've seen a little bottleneck. You know, there's always a chance for a bottleneck. When something's growing as fast as this industry is in this area, you're going to see bottlenecks.
Anything that we forgot? Anything you want to reiterate? I'd like to give guests the final words so that way the question isn't framed by me. But go ahead, sir. The floor is yours.
No, Jason, I appreciate your time, and be happy to talk to you at any time. But it's a really busy time here. Like I said, we've got almost 500 rigs in the Permian right now, and it's a great place to be and some great people in this area for sure.
To listen to the full-length interview with Robert Smith with NOV Wellstream Processing, or to listen to other Coffee and Capitalism features, visit thecrudelife.com. That's thecrudelife.com. Coffee and Capitalism Radio is part of the Crude Life Media Network. Check us out on Facebook and Twitter. All those social media links are available at thecrudelife.com. That's thecrudelife.com. My name is Jason Spies, and this is Coffee and Capitalism Radio, heard in the Crude Life. Music on today's program is written and performed by the Moody River Band. The Moody River Band has a new album hitting the downloadable streets on April 1st. For more information on the Moody River Band, their links, and their music, visit thecrudelife.com. That's thecrudelife.com, and click on the Musicians tab. This is the Moody River Band.
To get your mind blown. Mind blown, your mind blown. I'll show you something that's never been shown.
This is a good day for an open access and a fairness on access to the internet in the United States of America. The FCC, and I think a wrong-headed move, had repealed the net neutrality rules of the previous administration. We were able to prevent that from happening by passing CRA here in the Senate. We hope that the House will continue to pass it. Now, the over 6,000 North Dakota individuals who reached out to me to urge me to take this action, they need to turn their attention now to the House and get a vote in the House that will roll back a wrongheaded move on the part of the FCC in preventing net neutrality from being the law of the land in our country.
Over the past few months, I've told you about how unbelievable Hatch coaching is. Well, don't just take my word for it. Listen to what Greg Tavine of Emerging Prairies has to say about Hatch coaching.
Yeah, I mean, this guy gets people laughing. He gets people thinking. He's somebody that challenges and inspires. And what I think is so beautiful about Eric is he's real. I think the number one thing that I look for in speakers when we bring them into our platforms is that they're that person 365 days a year. Eric is not just a speaker on a stage. That's who he is at the grocery store. That's who he is when he's at the mall. But Eric is somebody that lives his values each and every day. And I think we can all respect that.
To find out more about Hatch Coaching or to have Eric Hatch speak at your event or company, visit hatchcoaching.com. That's hatchcoaching.com. Or call 701-212-1572. That's 701-212-1572.
Meridian Energy Group of Belfield, North Dakota is building the most technologically advanced oil refinery on the planet, the Davis Refinery. A project designed to achieve emission control levels the industry has never seen before. The Davis Refinery, working for North Dakota. MeridianEnergyGroupInc.com.
June 15th, save the date. That's June 15th, the Bakken Barbecue in Dickinson, North Dakota. That's June 15th. Be sure to save the date today, and we'll see you June 15th at the Bakken Barbecue in Dickinson, North Dakota. Welcome back to Coffee and Capitalism Radio, heard in the Crude Life Media Network. My name is Jason Spies, and I'm your host today. Up next, we hand the baton off to multimedia kidjapreneur Otis, and he sits down with Blue Weber from Artnest. This is Kids and Capitalism and the multimedia kidjapreneur Otis.
Hello, my name is Otis with Kids and Capitalism at Acno Gaming Esports Day. And today I am with Blue Weber, Artnest, and we're going to ask him some questions. So the first question is, do you work or own a company?
So I actually do a little bit of both. I work for the Downtown Development Association here in town, and I also, I'm one of the co-founders of Artnest.
Yeah, that's pretty neat.
Thanks.
What was your first job?
So I was about 8 years old, and my parents had just gotten divorced.
Oh,
and I actually, you know, stuff happens.
Yeah.
But so to help my mom out, I actually started working as a janitor with her, cleaning offices.
Oh,
so we lived around town and cleaned offices. It was actually a lot of fun, basically getting to vacuum and not think anything.
What's your favorite video game?
I would say that my favorite video game is probably... probably go Final Fantasy VII.
Is that the one with Cloud?
Yeah. Cloud and Sephiroth. And
yeah.
It is... I mean, everything about it is just fantastic. It's hard to beat.
All right. Any advice for young entrepreneurs? I mean, besides not stuttering?
Honestly, so... I this is kind of a weird one. One of my favorite people on the planet is an urban development person named Jane Jacobs. And her statement on the world was... every city has the capability to provide something for everyone as long as those people are willing to work towards that.
That's neat.
And I think that kind of says exactly what it is for young people.
Yeah.
Get out there and do stuff, just like you're doing, man. Just like, the more you work, the better the world around you becomes.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah.
Okay, I got one more question.
Yeah.
Is your name really Blue?
It is. It's my middle name. So my parents are like these old dirty hippies.
Oh.
So I'm named after a song by Bob Dylan. So that is literally my name.
All right. Well, thanks for being here and doing the interview.
Yeah. Let's go play.
Now we're gonna have no trouble with the treble. There's no breaks in the bass. It's just you and me. Singing it like we did in the good old days. Yeah, we're singing it like they did in the good old days. Because we're back to the way. Oh, well, you build the bridge and I'll hammer on the heart.
The music on today's program is written and performed by the Moody River Band. The Moody River Band has a new album hitting the downloadable streets on April 1st. For more information on the Moody River Band, their links, and their music, visit thecrudelife.com. That's thecrudelife.com and click on the Musicians tab. This is the Moody River Band.
Because we're back to the way.
Thank you, Secretary, for being here today and for the important work that you're doing every day. I'm going to follow up on some of the things we talked about at our DHS appropriation hearing, which you were at recently. I'm pleased to co-sponsor legislation with this committee's leadership that will give you authorities at DHS in regard to addressing some of the challenges with making sure that in our airspace we manage the UAS, unmanned aerial vehicles and systems adequately, not only to protect privacy, but also security. That's very important work. And my first question is, while we're working with you to provide those authorities to track and disable threatening unmanned aircraft, and as you would develop these counter UAS capabilities, do you have a plan in place to identify promising technologies from the private sector and get them validated by the department so that you can use them in this effort? And how will you go about testing and evaluating counter UAS technologies?
Thank you. So we've learned quite a few lessons from the Department of Defense, which, as you know, has this authority already and uses it in theater. So we're looking at their testing models. The approach would absolutely be to go to the private sector. It often is at DHS. It doesn't make sense to reinvent the wheel when something already exists, though, that could fill a need. So we're specifying out the requirements, making sure we understand what it is we need to do and then work in conjunction with the private sector. As you know, there's many centers of excellence, particularly those as well in your state. We're doing a lot of work there with the university as well, everything from intern programs to other capability building exercises to help get both the people and the technology.
So you hit the nail on the head there. That's where I'm going. We're working with you on a time to get you out this summer to see what we're doing in counter U.S., not only from the military standpoint, but customs and border protection, as well as the private sector. And as you develop that plan, we think we can be very helpful in terms of you seeing some of the things that are being done and then leveraging some of that technology development for DHS. When Secretary Mattis was in front of our Defense Appropriations Committee, we also talked about it in terms of the military. And in the same way, they're both seeking authority and developing some of these counter-UAS technologies. So we appreciate your willingness to engage in that, and we think it'll be very helpful and productive.
Well, thank you again for the bill.
Jack, be nimble. Jack, be quick. Jack, when I jump over candlestick, why don't you do now? Like the millionaires do. Put your stuff on the market. You can make a million too.
And that concludes this week's episode of Coffee and Capitalism Radio, heard on the Crude Life Media Network. For a full list of today's guest and interview, visit our website, thecrudelife.com. That's thecrudelife.com. We'll be back next week on this radio station at this time. For a full list of our radio affiliates and other media partners, please visit our website, thecrudelife.com. That's thecrudelife.com. My name is Jason Spies, and from the staff here at Coffee and Capitalism Radio, we're asking you to be happy, make money, and give back. Thanks for joining us this week, folks.
Sign on our front porch saying, hot stuff for sale, why don't you do now? Like the millionaires do. Put your stuff on the market. You can make a million too.
Seems like no matter who I talk to in the world of business these days, people are telling me about the success of Hatch Coaching. Listen to what Jeff Schatz, superintendent of the Fargo Public Schools, has to say about Eric Hatch and Hatch Coaching.
I just thought that his story about how he talks about the struggles that he and his family went through in having children, and how, you know, everybody has a hot mess, and how do you deal with that in life? And I just thought that really resonates well with, you know, folks. And so I thought that would be a great message for everybody to hear. Well, then beyond that, I've also seen Eric do some of the other things that he does with emceeing and leading other types of things that he does. He does coaching, I know, with students where the principals have hired him to come in and do that. So I just extended that opportunity for him to be the MC too. He was very well received.
For more information, call 701-212-1572 or visit coachingwithhatch.com. That's coachingwithhatch.com.
Meridian Energy Group of Belfield, North Dakota is building the most technologically advanced oil refinery on the planet, the Davis Refinery. A project designed to achieve emission control levels the industry has never seen before. The Davis Refinery, working for North Dakota. MeridianEnergyGroupInc.com.
Jason Spies, the most trusted voice in the Bakken.
Let's bring in Jason Spies, who is a multimedia journalist in North Dakota. Jason, what's your thought on this?
My dad always listens to Jason Spies.
No one does an interview like Jason Spies.
Jason Spies is the most trusted voice in the Bakken.
Love listening to Jason Spies on the radio, and if I miss him there, I catch him online.
You know, I don't know what justifies being placed in history books, Jason, but in my book, it's in there. This is a good thing.
Is your boss watching this? You need a raise.